All right. Thank you for attending session 164, titled Modern Polyamory versus Mormon Polygamy. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. We encourage you to also purchase other Sunstone merchandise or to make a donation to Sunstone to help support these amazing events. This session is 16 minutes long. We'll see about that. And we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework. Oh, I guess we will. A little about this presentation. This session will explore the difference between contemporary American polyamory and Mormon plural marriage. How does each relationship style impact consent, multiple partners, and child rearing? Mithrin has been researching polygamy since before he learned his grandfather came from polyamorous Mormon colonies in Mexico, as well as my mom was proposed to be someone's fifth wife. Now Mithrin puts his decade of research, blogging, and podcasting experience towards understanding the Mormon polygamy framework through the lens of modern polyandry and principles gleaned through psychology and science. I think I made that so hard to say, the person who was supposed to do it just gave up. Thank you for the courtesy laugh. Okay, so in the long and the short, I don't know how many of you know what polyamory is, but it's kind of this modern movement where you don't have just one partner. That's really the long and the short. And there is a particular book that has kind of ushered all this in called The Ethical Slut. If you ever meet a polyamorous person, you will know, just like if you ever meet someone who does CrossFit. And they will tell you about this book, and if you want to read this book, they will gladly lend you a copy, or push one onto you, or shove it until you absolutely have read this. I'm not going to do that today. We're going to kind of just skip through the basic overarching principles. But I have a lot of people who are in the post-Mormon moment and have just come out of the church who joined polyamory relationships, movement. I don't know exactly how to describe it. But the point is that I became very fascinated with the idea. And I began to wonder, was Joseph Smith really just polyamorous and born in the wrong era? Something like someone who was, say, homosexual in the military in the 1980s. And just could not get their lifestyle to fit within the framework. And so research began, and I just was doing this kind of on my own. I had no intention of anyone else ever seeing any of this. And then Lindsay Hanson Park was like, hey, you're presenting. Pick a topic. So here we are. Oh, come on. Right. Before we get started, someone, somewhere, if they hear this and is on the apologetic side, is going to argue, it's all presentism! And you know what? They're absolutely right. The definition of today's presentation is we are going to look at the past from the lens of the present. Got it? That's intentional. Now, the way that presentism should be used is, say, to evaluate if baptisms were mentioned in an ancient Mayan document. That should probably give you a view that, like, something's a little bit off. Or perhaps if you're arguing about the age of baptism in a document that claims to be from Mesoamerica, that would also be very curious because that was like an 1800s discussion that happened to be being done by Alexander Campbell, otherwise known as Sidney Rigdon's mentor, in the same general vicinity as the Book of Mormon was written. So things like that, that's how you should use presentism. It's not really an argument to just throw out what someone thinks of. And I was part of a group where we used this argument all the time. That is, we know that people in the Middle Ages would eat chocolate because we eat chocolate, and we're not that different from them. The basic idea is that we don't shift, that people are people throughout the eras. So people were gay before we started having a big LGBT movement. People were bi before that was very commonly expressed. People were trans before it became before hormones were a thing, right? They still had the experiences. People liked chocolate before they knew what chocolate was. For those of you who don't know, chocolate is a New World item, and so you could not have a recipe in the 1600s that used chocolate as a primary ingredient. If you saw that, that would be an anachronism, and you could instantly know that was in fact not a legitimate 1600 document. I hope you all got that reference. Okay. That said, presentism. We're gonna celebrate some presentism. And there's more after. You can come up and get some. Okay. So, in 2012, the LDS.org had the essay on polygamy, and we have 33 accepted wives. I know that this is like the broader Mormonism, and we can talk about Community of Christ and all the other branches, but we're going to go with 33. That's what we're going to talk about today. Brian Hales argues in the... he was the author of the essays. I don't know if you know that. They were not authored, but he's come out very vocally in defense of them and slipped up in a Mormon historians group on Facebook a couple times and said, when I was writing that, so he wrote them. Argues for non-sexual polygamy, and polyandry makes this argument irrelevant. So we're gonna just kind of take that argument and just remove it as a factor with all of this. So let's talk a little bit about age of consent in that time period. 10. Yeah. Yep, that was a thing. So... yeah. Okay. Most states had set it by the age at 10. A few states began 12 as the cutoff. Delaware was at 17. They were progressive in Delaware, man. 17. Oh, 7. Oh, never mind. But it wasn't really about age. And that's where that presentism comes in. Eat your chocolate. And that is that it was really about marital status and virginal status, right? If you were a virgin at 30, you were considered about the same as a 7-year-old as far as consent goes. If you had slept around, you were as ineligible whether you were 7 or 30. Anyone read Jane Austen, right? That whole thing with, like, Wickham? Okay, we'll get back to that. Anyway, and you can see that. It comes through in D&C 132, right? If any man espouses a virgin, they give her consent, and they are virgins and have vowed to no other man. The virginal status is mixed right in there with any idea of consent. Women who have slept around cannot consent. Yeah, ew, yeah, All right, so here's our timeline. I'm going to put a whole bunch up here you're not going to be able to see because it's tiny. I intend people to look at this after the fact. We're going to go fast through this, but it helps put things together. And if you know anything about me, you know that I do timelines. So if you want to get like in-depth on this, I have a polygamy timeline on exploringmormonism.com. I've got all like typing timelines and all sorts of things. So, all right, so as you can see, the blue here is our Kirtland period, Missouri, and Nauvoo. We're going to follow where Joseph was. There's some overlap there with where the saints are, but we're just going to follow Joseph. So most polygamy happened within 5 years. That's one thing to consider. 33 women over 5 years. Do the math. Good. Yeah. Yeah. It gets worse before it gets better. I promise. All right. So this is our first indication of any sort of polygamous relationship. Joseph is married to Emma, and he proposes to marry Elizabeth Rollins Leitner at age 12. She was able to consent, according to, you know, the thing, but says that one day you are going to marry me. Fanny Alger happened somewhere here, and I've got a lot of timelines on my blog if you want to know exactly when that little incident in the barn happened. I believe it was at the end of 1835, and I've got all sorts of notes as to how we get to that. A lot of sources place it at 1832. The main thing to know is that, in fact, the sealing was in 1836, which means no matter how you calculate it, that's just straight up adultery. Lucinda Pendleton Morgan and Louisa Beeman both fall kind of here in the Missouri time period. Morgan, of course, was the wife of the famous Morgan guy, not Captain Morgan, that's a different one, but the one that did the whole expose on the Masons and ended up dying, that Joseph Smith married, and we have kind of a shift in his opinions of Masonry somewhere around that time period, incidentally. Then they moved to Illinois. Right, he leaves from the Kirtland Safety Society, all that sort of thing goes down into Missouri, they leave from that, get into Illinois. They care about bigamy, as it turns out. $1,000 fine for the married man who married a second wife, and 1 year imprisonment, and a $500 fine for the unmarried woman who knowingly entered into the marriage with a married man. Yeah, 14.5 years in prison, $177,000 in today's currency was what Joseph Smith was facing. So whenever you hear anyone say that Joseph Smith committed no crimes and was never found guilty, boy, was there a giant Mormon leak about to happen. All right, so then we get into October of 1841, 1842. 10 women over 6 months, an average of one every 17 days. Every one of them was married or recently widowed. That's an interesting little pattern there, isn't it? Yeah, the statistics start to make it interesting, doesn't it? All right, and then we have John C. Bennett in May. So that's, you know, October through April, If you don't know who John C. Bennett is, he's a very fascinating figure in Mormon history. He was known as a snake oil salesman for most of his life, and Joseph Smith heard that he was coming to Nauvoo, so he sends someone out to go investigate the guy. The person comes back and says, "You should have nothing to do with this person. He is totally like a fraud and a felon." Joseph Smith makes him assistant to the prophet and has more power in the church than anyone else. Yeah. Because he helps them get the Nauvoo Charter. So he helps the city become a city, and he also helps them get the Masonic Lodge in Nauvoo. So then he gets busted here in May of 1842 for spiritual wifery. We're going to get back to spiritual wifery as well. At exactly the same time, he is proposing to Nancy Rigdon, which is incidentally the first non-married or non-widowed woman that he proposes to. I don't know that that comes out very often, but no, he picks Sidney Rigdon's niece. And then Eliza R. Snow, of all sorts of fame. Immediately after Eliza R. Snow there in July, we get Sarah Pratt and Orson Pratt. Orson leaves a suicide note, and Joseph leads a 1,000-man march across Nauvoo to find him. And there's kind of this hullabaloo. And then the married woman thing suddenly kind of becomes not as common. We start to move to teens. Almost like there's a pattern. Like he learned to let... No, he doesn't learn a lesson. Sarah Ann Whitney, two already married women. Ruth Boyce Sayers is right in that time period, if you know all the story there. Eight women in 80 days immediately between the time periods of 1843 and May of 1843. All were never married. Six were teens. And Emma accepts plural marriage on the 25th of May, 1843. So, eight women, 80 days. One every 10 days? How many guys here think they could actually, single or not, one every 10 days marriage? Go to Provo. It's not that good down there. All right, seven more by September. One every 18 days, so he slows it down almost to double the rate. He announces in High Council that, in fact, polygamy is a thing. William Law does the whole Mormon expositor thing, and Joseph dies in June. Oh, we missed one. Back we go. Helen Mar Kimball, right there in that middle of the 1843, where Emma's just about to learn. Now, remember who gets married with permission with Emma, right? That's the Lawrence sisters and the Partridge. Their parents are dead, and they have a large dowry, and Joseph uses that to pay off debts. Yeah, that's what gets William Law all sorts of upset. Oops, I'm going backwards now. All right, modern polyandry. Right? How well does that whole spiel fit into this? Now, you can find this, like, instantly. Just Google polyandry image, and it's everywhere. These people, I'm not one of them, just so you know. They love this graph. And I'm going to point out, I'm going to walk away from the microphone, I'm sorry for people listening to this later.
But, here is religious polygamy as this little separated thing out in the corner. Here's everything they consider as legitimate, okay? That's just
to give a little bit of a... And it's the casual sex is down here, and swinging.
Really, this is the polyamory, is the purple in the middle.
Got that?
By polyandry, do you mean polyamory?
Polyamory. Did I say... I'm mixing them up.
Yeah. In the abstract, too.
Polyandry. Thank you. Polyamory is actually like the love of multiple people. Polyandry is the thing. They refer to themselves as poly, so I mix them.
Okay.
It's just a bad on my part. I don't believe I did that, and I'm going to have nightmares at this moment for the rest of my life. Okay, so they are a subset of open relationships, but they are not all open relationships. Like cheating, if you notice, they also place that way out on the side. Commerce, that's a nice way to say prostitution, in case you didn't figure that out. So once upon a time ago, I decided I was going to write a book because there was a ward in Lehigh, Pleasant Grove, American Fork area, in which the bishop and the Elders Quorum the Relief Society president and the Sunday School president were all swingers, and they were swinging together. It got all cleaned up, and I thought that would make a really good movie. I could write it would be called Backyard Swing. And you have a picture of like the guy and the girl, the women would both be swinging, they'd be looking at each other's partners, and I was like, this is going to be awesome. And I started to write the screenplay, and I started to do research, and it got ugly really fast. The amount of non-consensual and abuse that happened in the swinging community there was really ugly. So I actually ended up trashing the idea. But some of this came out of that research as well. So polyamory or polyandry, which I've totally screwed up, is the ability or capacity to love more than one person at a time, sometimes seen as the practice of or desire for intimate relationships with more than one partner. The main parts being consensual, ethical, and responsible non-monogamy. Got that? Those are our three like litmus tests. Consensual, ethical, and responsible. They refer to things like this as polycules. I know because they tell me repeatedly. The idea being that you have... I'm going to once again leave the mic. I'm sorry.
So this would be like the unicorn woman with the man and wife that are already married, and or a boyfriend girlfriend. You can have where they are all, one of them's bi, they all get together, and you can have any sort of composite or mix of the above.
Polywogs are what you refer to children who are raised within a poly group, which is the most adorable name I can imagine. This all, the thought, right, that comes up immediately is, but what about jealousy? Like, I am not so cool when someone looks at my partner, spouse, and or significant other, let alone, like, the idea that you would be in a full relationship, like sharing moments and dinners, and what if your kid likes the girlfriend more than she likes mom, and all those sorts of things. And it all comes down to this concept of compersion. And we're going to go back to Joseph Smith with this in a minute, I swear. It's Mormon. And it's the idea of feeling joy one has and experiencing another's joy, such as witnessing a toddler's joy, feeling joy in response. That's way too much joy. Let's just break that down, right? When someone does something great and you're like, you did it, that's wonderful, that's the feeling of compersion, right? And this is supposed to go all the way to when someone has sex with someone else. You know they're having a good time, you should feel joy that they are enjoying that relationship. Directly contrasted with jealousy. Now, again, this is probably illegible to people in the back. So the chocolate was not just to bribe you forward, but it was also in the hopes that you'd be able to actually read any of this. But I'm gonna leave the mic and Vanna White this as well, because I am a one-man band.
Really? You're going to do the feedback at that point? Okay. So all of these are different types of relationships. These are people who are living together. They have sex together. They are your typical relationship. Over here, we have a relationship that is sexual partnership only. They just, you know, booty call. Over here, we have a long-distance relationship that mixes with former partners. So they still just keep in touch. They're old friends. And over here we have this wiggly line, that's a non-sexual relationship, right? And there's just all these different kind of combinations, and they talk about how all of these things provide value, and you can get something from having multiple relationships with multiple people. You don't have to be everyone's everything. That's really key to their philosophy, because that breaks relationships. You want to be able to have a broader tent. I'm not sure that I agree entirely with that, but the main thing that I got from that is that we go back to Joseph Smith's map. And remember Brian Hales and how he said that he had non-sexual relationships? Well, there was one. I don't know if you caught it. I went pretty fast through that timeline, but it's Ruth Daggett voice. And if you know it about her situation, her husband was actually physically there at the ceiling, and he insisted that it be for eternity only. Which tells me that that's probably not the one to base your thesis off of. You should probably take that as an exception to what happened with all the teenage girls. Anyway, my point is that probably this is what it looked like, with all the other ones being sexual, the one being a wavy line, and Emma being the one that he lived with. So let's go through our three standards for modern polyandry, which again is misspelled on there. Consensual. Well, Helen Markimble was given 24 hours to respond, right? That's not exactly consensual. She was promised eternity if she agreed for all of her family. Again, he was the mayor, the head of the army, her religious leader. No, I don't think that works. Power dynamics come to play. If any of you have not had the HR conversation at your work, in which a manager is not allowed to, you know, have a sexual relationship with an employee under them, those power dynamics at that level, that, again, presentism,
From our modern view, you're not allowed to have that level of relationship. This is way more than that. Cheating, right? That's that Emma learned on May 25th, 1843, about the however many that were by that point. The sisters didn't know each other, had married Joseph Smith. That's not consensual either, right? So we kind of fell all on those terms. Joseph had already married them 2 months earlier in March without Emma's knowledge when she gave permission for him to marry them. That is not consent. Ethical. Slander of those who don't join willingly, right? That's Martha Botherton. That's Sarah Pratt. Joseph repeatedly claims it is not happening while it is in fact happening. And this is a big no-no in the polyamory, polyandry community, the poly community. If you go out and you... how do I put this? Lots of guys will join the community thinking they can just get sex, okay? We're just going to be blunt. And if you do that, if that's one of the things that happens, you get isolated from the community. That's known as a predator behavior, because what you should be doing is you should be caring about the other person's wants, the other person's wishes, and if you are currently in a relationship, you need to make that known, and her wants and wishes, including whether or not you would participate. That is clearly not what happened with Emma. And responsible. It got him killed. It was done so irresponsibly. So no, and we fail on that one too. All right, so what about the other groups that were doing this sort of thing in and around Joseph Smith? I'm like, maybe it was something that was going on. Maybe because people are the same, right? Chocolate, again, presentism. We're the same. We like chocolate, they like chocolate. So the Cochranites, Brigham Young and a whole bunch of others went to a mission in 1831 to the Cochranites. One of the fascinating things is if you read this from the apologetic point of view, they say that Brigham just went out like as a lone wolf and did this all on his own. I think it's funny they throw Brigham under the bus for going out and finding out about polygamy. Long and short, they danced like Spin Me Right Round Baby, like a record baby. The Cochranites also dismissed traditional concepts of marriage. Seven wives shared one man, so familiar in that respect. Cochrane would assign women to the men, since legal marriages were not considered valid, so that ethical point, that's a problem. He'd also shift these women between men as he saw fit. Sound familiar? We have some groups that still try to do that sort of thing. It was said that about half the women at one point were assigned to him. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Cochrane's habit of taking young women into private rooms for extended periods of time. He's been called the John the Baptist of Mormonism because so many Cochranites are among those who converted to Mormonism and moved west. Have you ever wondered how Joseph got polygamy to go and to really work? Who did he talk to first? The people who had been living this already in another religious group. And that is how he was able to start building his little loyalty groups. So let's talk about the Oneida. I love the Oneida. Anyone here have Oneida silverware in your drawer? It's that Oneida. Yeah, they went from like sexual group to silverware. Communalism, as in property and possessions, otherwise they all were one and had no poor among them. They had complex marriage, male sexual continence, that would be the time rhythm pull-out methods for modern context, and mutual criticism. Yeah, therapy, constantly. Which, when you see what they did, it will make sense. They believed strongly in a system of free love, so they were the hippies. The Oneida, by the way, were in and around Nauvoo, Illinois. They were after Joseph Smith's death, so Joseph was not influenced by them. Maybe they were influenced by Joseph. I haven't found a link. Any member was free to have sex with any other who consented, purely. No virginal status, no age of consent, was, like, hard to find. But there were things about children. We'll get to that in a second. Possessiveness and exclusive relationships were frowned upon. You could be sent to your bishop for an interview for wanting to have an exclusive relationship. They refer to this as complex marriage. Because the natural outcomes of intercourse was pregnancy, raising children was communal. So you have a child with anyone, everyone raises them. Caches. Women over the age of 40 were to act as sexual mentors to adolescent boys. Older men often introduced young women to sex. Yeah, it is the church of the MILF, okay? That's what they were. One of the most radical and institutional efforts to change women's roles and to improve female status in 19th century America, including communal child care so they could go to work, unwanted pregnancies were avoided through the practice of male continence. They had less gender roles. You could do any job, no matter what your gender was. They were able to wear functional bloomer-style clothing. They had pants. And maintain short haircuts. So this is a lot more like the movement of today. This is an actual community. So yeah, people were the same back then. But they gravitated here, not towards the polygamy situation. Or maybe they tried to, but it was of a question. There are... This is still a problem within their community that they complain about. I'm just going to read... This is a post. I'm going to do it anonymously, but... I'm clearly not a poly woman, should anyone get that idea later. Okay, we're clear, good. I'm a poly woman who is open to dating and having sex with both men and women. I'm open to new experiences. I prefer men. I want to be slut congratulated instead of slut shamed. I've noticed a pattern when I'm around men, even men who are in general great people and not judgmental in regards to sex. When I mention hooking up with women, I'm high-fived, congratulated, validated. Guys think it's cool. But suddenly, when I mention how hot I think it is to have a threesome with two guys, how my ultimate fantasy is a threesome with two guys who are also bisexual and want to play with each other, it's, that's kind of out there. So one of the things to note that is similar between all of it is that the women always seem to get the short end of the stick. That it is always a one man with multiple women preference, and that seems to be built in and baked in at the bottom. There's still a bias to men owning women, even today, and even in the Oneida. If you notice, it was progressive for the 19th century. With all this together, we want to perhaps come to a conclusion on our good buddy Joseph. He was not polyandrous or amorous. Either, simply living in another era. He does in fact mark most of the traits that you would find as a predator. In that time period, they were warned about, and in this one, we can throw out more chocolate, or not, because we don't have to have the presentism lens. If you want to look at what was considered a predator in the era, we can look at books by Jane Austen, or contemporary novels, or what people were worried about at the time. And he fits pretty much the villains in all of them. Who here is familiar with, of course it's gone now, Pride and Prejudice, right? What is Wickham's big crime? It's that he runs off with a younger daughter before the older ones are married, and he doesn't marry her right away, and in that era, riding in a carriage with a woman with no supervision, which is just the two of you, that was enough to ruin the woman. Now go back to those 33 and Brian Hill's argument. Remember that? He didn't have sex with them. But he did enter a relationship and was alone with them for periods. It doesn't matter. Because without the presentism context, within the context of the era, he was still depriving them of their virtue. Does that make sense? All right. Too many people are nodding. You've heard me give this lecture before at that point. What else did I want to cover with this? So the things to not ask poly people, there's a list out there, and it's BuzzFeed style, but I'm just going to go through a couple of them. One of them is, don't you get jealous. They're used to it, they will answer the question, but you'll see that same glazed look in your eye that missionaries say when someone asks, do you still have polygamy? They get asked it so often, of course they get jealous, right? Chocolate again. We're all the same, but they have a way of coping with it, they work through it, they have this methodology. Does it break apart relationships? It absolutely does. One of my friends that was supposed to be here and help me present just went through a terrible breakup over, in fact, a jealousy situation. Another one is, what about when you want to have kids? And that's where the whole polywogs thing comes in, having more people take care of your kids. There's been a long history throughout humankind of how that can happen. It doesn't just have to be according to the proclamation on the family. It turns out you can raise kids in all sorts of things with all sorts of people, and they are just fine. Aunts and uncles have always kind of helped to come and take care of. Kids can be attached to them too, and it doesn't take anything away from mom and dad. There is just a way to handle all of that. I forget what the others were, but basically, if you think the first thing that comes to your mind, probably instead of saying it, you should say something like, oh, that's nice. So, what do you like to watch with your partners? Just put the S at the end, and you're good. With that, I think we'll open. What time do we have?
4:16.
4:16. Yeah, no, 15 minutes. I hit it on the nose. go ahead and ask questions. Let's do anything with Polly first. Anything with history after, because those will be longer. All right, looks like history it is. Go ahead and come up to the mic.
Sure. You mentioned that Joseph Smith got his model of how to do the polygamy thing correctly from the Cochrane Group. Is that an assumption, or do you have an actual historical link showing that influence?
Yeah. First of all, I forgot to do this. I need to do the Superman thing here. So, if you have not heard, there is something called a Tapir Fest that is coming up on September 29th. It is a celebration of leading, controlling religions. We don't care what religion it is, but there is going to be a How to Coffee presented by Mill Creek Roasters, a How to Alcohol presented by people who know how to mix drinks, and a sex therapist, and just being able to come out and enjoy and be proud that we have left rather than hiding. And we have a booth straight back there. So to answer your question, as far as the Cochranites go, what we do have is that Brigham Young was there. We have that they were there, and that 1831, just after that, is the first revelation that the apologists refer to. With Ezra Booth saying that they received a revelation they were to take women from the Lamanites to be wives. Now that was directed to Martin Harris, who had just been separated from his wife over that whole 116 pages losing the farm mortgage thing. And so they'd gone through divorce court. So it's not necessarily so, but it's all in that same time period when he's thinking about marriage. And that is what they will cite when they say in the polygamy in Kirtland essay that as early as 18, revelations are as early as 1831, they're referring to that one about taking wives from the Lamanites, which we don't know whether it's about polygamy or not, but happened immediately following a whole bunch of members going to the Cochranite groups and a whole bunch of polygamous people joining the church. So I don't know that it's too much of a stretch. That said, that if we go back to the timeline. I do sound effects. Mary Elizabeth Rollins Lightner, age 12, was before the Cochranite mission. So he was still thinking about 12-year-olds long before he was introduced to it from the Cochranites. So I can go either way, but I think the how they implemented it, where the one leader got half the women, I think that may have influenced Joseph.
I just wanted to know... Excuse me. I just wanted to know if you have any... documentation, or I guess not really documentation, but what you've read about that would lead you to believe that Joseph Smith had sex with more than just Emma.
Yeah.
And Manny Alger.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some common sense at play as well. But in the Temple Lot case, we have you got me, Partridge, Emily, or Eliza, I forget which one. One of the two Partridge girls, no, Lawrence, Sarah Lawrence, testifies, she's asked point blank on the stand under oath, did you have sex with Joseph Smith in a bed more than once? And she says no. And he says, did you have sex with Joseph Smith more than once? She says yes. So there's at least one. Sylvia Sessions, of course, told her daughter that she was in fact the daughter of Joseph Smith. I assume the woman knew how that happens. Brian Hales came out with this big revelation. Not that I have a thing against Brian Hales, but he comes pretty key when you're talking polygamy, having written the official LDS document, in which Phoebe Sessions supposedly was in on this super secret conversation that exposed that Sylvia did not mean that the mother did not mean Sylvia was, no, Sylvia did not mean that her daughter Josephine, that was Joseph's child, literally, but that it was a spiritual thing. And he posted it in the Facebook historians group, and he was torn apart to the level that he left the group. because it was just, it was not, it did not substantiate his claim at all. And I don't know if he ever published, I think it was on his website for a while, but he eventually pulled it down because it simply did not back up. So I think that's another one that's pretty darn solid. I mean, the next piece that's probably the biggest is that Brigham certainly didn't care to not have sex. He was pretty prolific. So if it was wrong for Joseph and it's right for Brigham, did God just suddenly just change? So, and along with that, we have the time periods. And this gets perhaps a little crude. We've been a little crude. I hope that's okay. I hope no one's offended. But he marries the girls like 2 days apart in most cases, as though he were resting up. It's a very fascinating, like the time frame kind of says that he is spending one night with each of them and moving on. Yeah.
Wasn't there a letter from Joseph, penned by Joseph as well, explaining that he wanted the company of another woman while he was in jail?
Yeah, this is Sarah Ann Whitney, I want to say, and thank you, there's nods. You're all looking at me. It gets a little bit hard to get all the facts straight. It's easier when I'm behind a computer. It's nice and safe to throw out the facts out there. Yeah, and she's it's actually to her parents to bring her to him, and he had just been married shortly before that. And then it says to destroy the letter. Again, the apologist would say, well, he just wanted her company, you know, glass of wine or perhaps water. Because we're not going to go there, and just to talk with this young female that he married in a very consensual, not odd way, and I think that the whole like, well, Emma's not there is a pretty good indicator for the rational and reasonable of us around that, and let's say that my little map here is wrong, right? That it's only the ones that were just there mentioned. Let's say it was five. And the one husband had to be standing there to say that it was celestial only. The point is that these are still relationships. And they had, in the context of the era, they had consequences for the women. They had consequences for the society. They were, even if one night stands, they were relationships. And that we get hung up on sex as Mormons, I think, an awful lot. Or it's former Mormons, as people who are thinking to join the Mormonism, we in this era love this concept of that relationships are all sex-based. And that was one of the things that came out from my study of the whole poly movement, is that, no, there are, the emotional affair is a thing. You can have a full relationship that no one ever actually has sex. And that these certainly seem to be the case, especially with, like, in Mormon Enigma, he gives the locket to one of the, I think it's the Lawrence sisters, and Emma sees it on her and knows instantly she's one of his wives and gets, like, really mad at Joseph. There's a relationship there. And whether or not he had sex with her, he's giving the locket that Emma thought was for him to another woman, and there's pain, and there's hurt, and there's jealousy, and there's loss. And I think that should be the more relevant topic, is from the women's point of view, were these real relationships? If you read their letters and their commentary and them testifying before the Supreme Court, yeah, they thought they were in a relationship. And that should matter more than the sex.
I actually want to bounce off of that point of these relationships had consequences in these times. And I also want to go to the Oneida group, where they recognize that these relationships have consequences, but within their community they said, we're trying to kind of oppose society's existing model. So if Joseph hadn't been a total creep about it and was lying and not revealing, and it was more like the Oneida community, then would you personally have a different view of it, or do you still think that even what the Oneida community was doing still was problematic and not really an improvement upon kind of what was the default treatment?
Yeah, and you're asking my personal opinion, so, you know, hold on to your chairs, because here it goes. I think that poly is, in fact, just like LGBT, that there are people who are born that way, and I'm not one of them, and that it flows, and they can figure that out, and that it's natural, and that the rest of the world looks as unnatural to them as that does to people who are not poly. And I made the comparison with a gay in the military in the 80s on purpose, is that was a very dangerous time to admit it or express it or act on it. I think that Joseph tried to chameleon what he was doing, and he would have tried to chameleon the society if he had set it up that way. For the Oneida, I think that it was a place that people who were that could go and be safe. And that was not a bad thing. I think it's okay for people to live their lives. Do I think that it endangers marriage? No. Do I think that it's going to overthrow current society? No. Because people get attached. I don't know if you're familiar with attachment theory. I have a wonderful therapist to recommend if you need to talk about attachment. But we actually form chemical bonds. When sex happens at a time periods, when you spend enough time around each other, those attachments are real. For these people, they can form multiple. For other people, you form one with a certain particular someone. And that becomes your everything. And it's okay for both to exist around each other, just like gay people. Getting married does not destroy other people's marriages. So I don't think that it was bad back then. I don't think that it's bad now. I think that people are the same. Chocolate throughout the beer.
I don't want to get into speculation too much, but I am interested in your take, and more broadly in the take of those that you've engaged with online over the years, as far as Joseph's motivations and thought process going into this. And of course, there are people who are like, he was just sexually addicted, and he was justifying it with his revelations, and other people who would argue the opposite. So I'd just be curious to hear your take and more generally the thoughts of those you've engaged with.
Okay, I'm going to do this with a timeline because I'm me. Originally, I of course thought Joseph totally thought he was a prophet of God, knew what he was doing, and was confident in his approach. And whether it was voices in his head or not, or just that overwhelming feeling that you're right and that you were doing the right thing. Then I began to research what he actually said. And the more that I saw the early days, the more it was clear that at the point where he is treasure hunting, there's this guy who has this booth over here that has all these treasure chests on it, and like he's doing a comic book about Joseph's life. One of those, there's a treasure chest. Go ahead and ask him for the whole story, because I was still blown away by this. He gets someone to pay him to go treasure hunting, and then he has someone hide in a tree and like dumps a treasure chest of dirt in the guy's face. That is not someone who believes he's really finding treasure. He goes up to get a gold brick for Josiah Stoll and convinces Josiah to bring Emma all the way back to Palmyra to go get this gold brick. And when they get there, he's like, you know what, it would leave Emma alone with the new family. I just can't do it now. We'll get it later, Josiah. That's not the behavior of someone who believes the oil he's selling. But then there's this kind of point in his notes, in his own journal and in his own writings, where it seems like he buys his own Kool-Aid. And it's somewhere around the time where things are going really well with the Kirtland Safety Society. And I think he begins to believe that this bank is going to save all of his financial problems, and that it's really working, and that this land grab, and it's going to turn over, and he really is being persecuted by this guy by the name of Grandison Newell. If you've heard any of my podcasts, I always talk about him. He's basically Mr. Smithers from The Simpsons. He's the millionaire who's in Kirtland before Joseph gets there, but his assets are liquid. And so he is able, he doesn't like Joseph. He doesn't like that he's there. Joseph's a millionaire, but it's all in land. And because people come in, they buy the land, and then they consecrate it to Joseph's church. And so Joseph needs a way to make that land liquid. And that's what kicks off the whole Kirtland Safety Society. It's a way to turn frozen assets or non-liquid assets into liquid assets for him to refute Grandison Newell's multiple criminal charges, because he would sue him over the most mundane and terrible things, including jaywalking. It wasn't a thing back then, but like Grandison comes up with it as a concept to try to get Joseph Smith. And Oliver Cowdery actually becomes a justice of the peace to refute the jaywalking charge. It's something like he spit in the road as he was traversing it backwards, which is essentially jaywalking. Anyway, the point is that Joseph feels the high life at this point. He feels persecuted, and he feels like God is delivering him time and time again. I think he begins to buy his own Kool-Aid. And then when he gets driven out, and it all picks up again in Nauvoo, that's when he gets bold, and he starts going to town with it. So by the time he's doing this with the women, I think he's saying it with full conviction that this really is from God, and God really does want to do it. Then we have this weird story. It's Mary Rowlands-Leitner. We're going to go back. You remember her? The 12-year-old? She's married someone else by this point. And Joseph says that an angel is going to come to her and deliver a message. And she recounts that the angel comes in through the window. Catch that? Like Scooby-Doo style, right? Why does the angel come in? Anyway, he comes in through the window, and he delivers the message that she is to marry Joseph. And then she questions him, and he kind of stumbles, and he just restates, "You're supposed to marry Joseph." And he goes back out through the window. So I think the old tricks were still in his bag.
Yeah.
So he may have convinced himself of it, but he was using people to deliver his... I think he had convinced himself that humans really do fulfill the prophecies. Because by this point, there's this kind of anecdote in the journal, or in the School of the Prophets, where Brigham is quoting Joseph. I don't think Joseph's there at the time. And he says that what really matters is that the prophecy is fulfilled. We make the prophecies fulfilled. And then he later recites that when they leave Missouri and they move the rocks around to set up where the temple's going to be, and they say that work has started on the temple. He requotes it there. But he said it before at the School of the Prophets. The point is that I think Joseph was teaching that, and he was teaching that to such a level that people were willing to dress up as angels to convince women to marry him. And that's crazy to me, and I don't know how to buy whoever asked the question. What does that say about what he really believed about himself? But that's kind of where I get to, is that everything he writes sounds like that he's buying the Kool-Aid, but then he pulls stuff like that. That was a long answer to a short question. Anything else before we break up?
I kind of get the sense that he was playing into his own writings to keep the facade going.
Yeah, okay.
It's like me using Facebook now as a narcissist to present that my life is different to what it really is. So when I meet people that see me on Facebook, they say, "This is me, this is how I am," you know what I mean? And then when they come back and check that I really was doing these things. You know?
So we had this long conversation years ago, back and forth, about Joe, this whole Grandison Newell thing, right? He is constantly at law, and everything he does is being watched. And having been watched very closely for a very long time, I can say how paranoid that makes you, and that your journal entries will start to shift as though someone else was going to read them the next day. And I do think that there is something to that. His journals go from, those early days, didn't keep a lot of journals, but what there was is very open and it's free-flowy and kind of like mine. I remember I wrote one in my journal. We watched Raiders of the Lost Ark today. I am 6 years old. It has that sort of flow, and the later ones very much read like someone is going to read them. And I think that time period did shift so that he was constantly putting this forward, even in his own internal monologue. And when he's writing to himself, he's really writing to keep selling that I am a prophet.
Well, he's got to know that he's got a pretty popular book now. This church is going to continue, hopefully, right? So they're going to read my stuff at some point. Because he knows that the God's not coming to the second coming's not coming. He knows that too, right?
That whole thing about you'll see Jesus if you live to be 80, I don't know. I don't know if he knew that the second coming was not coming in his lifetime, because there was a lot of apocalyptic... So I think he actually believed that the second coming was coming, and he was really hopeful that he was going to be okay and lead everybody into it. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you're okay. So, kind of going back to the 1831 Lamanite brides and such, there's actually quite a few, I shouldn't say quite a few, but there's a couple fundamentalist groups that believe that Joseph was taking Lamanite brides in 1831, 1832.
Yeah.
And I wonder how the taking of a Native American woman as your, you know, polygamous bride would fit into the polyamorous, you know, model that you have up there.
Boy, we're mixing colonialism with polyandry. We saw that one coming. So I do want to point out that none of them are, in fact, Lamanite that have been listed for the 33, right? If you even go to Fawn Brody's 45 or 54, none of them are Lamanite-ish either. And by Lamanite, that's in quotes, because, of course, we don't know that with DNA that no one that Joseph Smith ran into would qualify as a Lamanite or any sort of Middle Eastern heritage at all. But And I say that even if you want to believe in the church, I don't mean to put anyone down, but they just, all the apologists have kind of reneged that we don't know where the Lamanites are. So I don't, that revelation leaves a big question, because of course he didn't follow it. Martin Harris didn't follow, like none of them followed it, right? We go with Brigham Young, how many of his wives were Native American? There's one that was traded to him, Lorenzo Snow, Wilford Woodruff, Heber J. Grant, like it wasn't a thing. So, but what? How does it fit within polyandry? I mean, you're still Brigham Young traded for his wife. That's not consent. That's not ethical, and it's not.
Responsible.
Nailed it. So, without delving too far off track here, so there are groups that do believe that Joseph did take brides, and that they continue to live outside, kind of not necessarily within the borders of, you know, the church, but continue to live within their tribes and move forward, and that there is a progeny of Joseph Smith that is, you know, Native American. And so if that was the case, you know, if you're moving 4, 5, 6 generations, you know, into the forefront now, if Joseph Smith was taking a Native American bride as a plural bride outside of his consent from Emma, obviously, we don't have anything to say that, because some of this is, a lot of this is just speculation. There's not a lot of documentation, but just wonder, I mean, the consent for a Native American, I'm not really familiar with the polyamory models and such. In, say, 19th century colonialism, taking a Native American woman as a bride, kind of how would that fit within the models? Kind of what, I'm just trying to clarify the question.
Well, I really wish my friend were here to answer this question so I didn't have to. Okay, first we need to address the sources, right? I don't know of any that are contemporary to Joseph being alive. We're talking about sources that happened after he died. And from what I understand, this is a Lauren Woolley claim, and my memory's fuzzy, I might be off, but this is the bodyguard to Joseph Smith, who is a first cousin to Joseph F. Smith, and broke off, and we get the FLDS in Short Creek, and all of that, right? And mostly he got it in a revelation, and then they went back to find sources. And that's always a dangerous tack to take. It's the same way you end up with the gold mine that's like way down in Spanish Fork, or Nephite gold coins in the lost mine up here in the Ute territory, which if anyone wants to go break some laws, it's really, never mind. I do have Troublemaker on my thing. So I don't know how much credence I would give. I mean, it's a justification, and it's a justification rewriting history and looking back on. But if he were to, you know, I think that the answer that you get from most of the poly people is that it's just blatant colonialism. But if the woman was like, oh, Joseph is so handsome, I really love him, that would be fine. But if it was this, I'm the chief, I'm making peace with these people who have invaded my area, and the Native American, Andrew Jackson had just opened up Missouri as for settlement, and all these people have rushed here and are taking over the land, that's probably not a consensual, ethical, or responsible relationship. That would be my answer. And I assume that they would do that with less history and more flowy feelings. Okay. Any questions about anything else in Mormon history before we wrap up? All right. Then in that case, I will leave you to the rest of your sunstone. Enjoy. Stop by the booth. There's candy out there as well as candy up here. Feel free to take more. And enjoy your modern worldview. It's not one to throw away lightly. Which one? No. So once upon a time ago, I had a contest for people to do their best Fanny Algers.
Okay.
And there's one where it's like Emma's eye looking through the keyhole, and she's got like red.
I've seen that.
Yeah. Okay, okay. That came out of that same contest. This one came out of the contest. And so I went back to Reddit from 2010 and found my post and people that had submitted.
That's fantastic. politics and then we'll just
enjoy.
Mind if I?
Yeah. Oh, great.
Ultimate. That was excellent.
Good. Good.
At lunch, I was talking to a historian, Russell, from the
Yeah.
He's going to be giving a presentation later on Trump. I mean, these two go together.
Oh my! Yeah. What is Trump just Polly? No. I think that fits the same. All of it.
It's the
Polly or just a misogynist?
Henry Kissinger's statement.
Yeah, he's clearly there's more to it because he doesn't. There's no consent, no conversion, no.
Power is the open at Henry Kissinger. So like Smith is the head of the army. Have pockets full of money.
Now he was up against the
head of the bank. I mean,
versus Warren.
Have you ever heard the theory that Emma may have had a few?
So she asked for William Law. I think that's solid.
We know William Law, but he was like horrified.
Right, and I think that it snaps any chance of it out because William's pretty vocal right off the bat to the point that Joseph doesn't want.
Throws
a couple of Williams way and William doesn't pass. And so Emma, I think, climbs up at that point. Some people will say that she did, but I just don't see any evidence. I think she climbs up after that and Joseph dies too soon afterwards. So Biderman comes along and she just doesn't want for the rest of it. She's one woman after that.
And somehow it gets into 132 right in the middle of all that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. This was amazing, too.
Good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Very nice. I need some chocolate.
Yeah, take it, please.
No, just give me these.
The special darks, yeah, that's my jam. I think they're all special dark, actually. They are special dark Venus or special dark crackle.
I only got like a week or two ago.
That's my jam. I'm a special dark person.
Well, then I better not take them, dude.
They all are.
I thought I was the only special dark that I don't.
All right. There's a reason I have a whole one.
Because you're new.
Here, take it. Take it.
I really thought I've been good lately. Until this.
I was wondering if
nobody's
you
names
have
are
you
visible.
Seen this other one that
about the Polly later on? Yes, I did, and they're going to totally like the other direction of like, no, it's all fine. So now you know the truth. You can go in there and correct them.
What were they saying?
I don't know.
I was wondering if
but
you'd...
reading the synopsis, it sounds like they're going to be like, yeah, no, Polyandry was also a thing back then. The Oneida. Yeah, Joseph Smith may have just been. No, he really was a predator. Well, let's consider if no, this like no. But
yeah,
it sounds like they're going to come to a different conclusion, and that's fine. But
I just need to review the facts.
Right. According to definitions, present and then.
I noticed on your slides you only had like 18 wines there. Did you have...
What do you mean?
Whoop.
On the one...
Only at any given time, I couldn't fit them all.
Oh, okay.
That's really what it came down to. So I was going to actually map out this whole...
So do you have a website thing that you can... Cause,
yeah, I have exploringmormonism.com.
I just wanted to know... How much?
This one.
How much of them were like?
It's not presenting anymore.
What's the word? Adultery versus. I know the Fanny Alger was definitely adultery.
Yeah.
Situation, but like, how many of these did he have sex with and didn't marry or had sexual relations?
So sex and didn't marry. There are a whole bunch of accounts, okay. But we never talk about them because we get focused.
Adultery.
Yeah, but none of them are legal, so
yeah, well,
they're all adultery.
You know, could I like to. Against the Mormon definition of adultery, you know, where he's not married, but like...
Okay, so let's go back to Lucinda Morgan. Like, there was no endowment.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't be sealed because the priesthood power was just barely restored. Like, how do you... She wasn't, like, put through an endowment to be sealed for eternity. So if it was an...
So Lucinda, where's she on here?
So she is... Let me go back to our timeline...
So there she is, 1838.
1838, uh-huh. So he's gotten the keys, supposedly, to the seal in 1836.
Okay.
He's got 2 years, but she doesn't go through. The endowment is given out here in 1843.
Right.
So it's an eternal sealing with no endowment?
Uh-huh.
Does that happen? Can you
yeah.
Can you eternally marry someone who's just been baptized? Like... there's all these questions that spring up because it wasn't smoothly enacted. And so my answer is all of them, except for...
And then the revelation of the plural marriage, is that happening in like
1843 40? November?
Right in here is when... No, May. Right in here is where we get Doctrine and Covenants 143.
Uh-huh. But when did they say that it actually happened? I mean, cause is that like an apologetist?
So Ella has to know here, which means there had to be some definition, but the written down where she like throws it in the fire is somewhere in that time.
1843-ish?
Yeah, May of 1843 to November.
And then what about like, so the one that Emma pushes down the stairs, when did that happen?
So that is the Partridge Girls here, but that's a memory of...
Eliza Snow, and she. This is many, many, many years after, and there's a feud going on between the Community of Christ or the Reorganized Church and Brigham, and she is married to Brigham. There is no contemporary evidence that Emma pushed anyone down the stairs, nor any mention before they need to distance themselves from Emma. So I don't know that ever actually happened. But those are the two. It's one of the two sisters.
I'd be pushing them all down the stairs. Just me.
What is it with dudes in this tendency to anytime something upsets you, like, say, let me describe this violent thing that I would do in that situation?
Throw them out the airlock.
Like, all the time. It doesn't help.
Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate your time.
I will close down the notebook.
Is that all on that video, that website you're talking about?
No, I will put the presentation up. It goes through Sunstone. They have like a paywall for this one. But I've got the timeline that I pulled all that information from is on exploringmormonism.com.
ExploringMormonism.com. Yep. Okay.
And they keep moving the links. I try to link 100% to LDS sources. And they keep moving them on me. So if it's broken, it's because it was an LDS source, but they
and
just
they moved
it.
But gotcha. Or removed it.
Thank you.
I update frequently because of that.
Oh, that's good.